How many of you know what the game of Tetris is? Is that familiar to all of you? Okay, I wanted to make sure I wasn't choosing some obscure cultural thing that was lost on us. In that game, you know, you've got different shapes that are dropping down in the game space, and you have to rotate them and adjust them to get them to fit into all different little spaces. And you have to get them all to line up, so there can't be any gaps, because if there's gaps, then it just fills up more and more, and as it gets higher, you start feeling more anxious and trying to get these shapes to fit better, and eventually, it gets to the top, and the game is over. I think maybe some of us feel like that today. Like, if our life was a game of Tetris, there are all these painful thoughts and difficult emotions that are just dropping, scary shapes that just keep dropping into our life every morning, and it's like we're trying to rotate these things around and figure out where they fit, and there's all these gaps, and it just doesn't seem to work, and maybe this morning you feel like the game of your life is filled up, and you're wondering if it's game over. Where do we put it all when it feels like it's too much? You might be wondering, what do you do with all of that? Is there a place for all of this in your life of faith? And the answer to that is yes. And the place to put that, at least to begin putting that, is what is called lament. What is lament? Well, biblical lament is a passionate expression of grief and sorrow or distress directed toward God. And it's found in many places in the Bible, in books like the Psalms, and in fact, this is not a surprise, in a book called Lamentations and other prophetic writings. And I just hope that knowing that scriptures have lament in them encourages your weary heart this morning. In fact, the Bible doesn't just have a little bit of it. We have an entire book called Lamentations. There are 42 individual Psalms of lament, 16 community or national Psalms of lament. So clearly this means that God wants to help us to know how to respond and walk through dark times or seasons. He's put a lot of that in His Word. But it isn't natural for us, lament, isn't it? It's not something that we have learned, it's something we need to learn to do. It's not something that comes natural. And that's partly because our modern American culture doesn't prepare us to do this. Our culture teaches us how to celebrate, how to have a good time, but it doesn't teach us what to do with sorrow and anguish and these difficult, hard feelings. Instead, our modern culture wants us to hurry up and make us feel like we've got to kind of put grief on a fast track and kind of move on and get past it and as quickly as possible so we don't feel bad ourselves and the people around us stop feeling bad too. But we know from experience that you just simply cannot hurry up grief and you can't speed past sorrow. So this means we often don't know how to respond to these kinds of grief in our life. We don't know what to do, and we don't know how to help others who experience grief as well. And so we're left with this awkward feeling about ourselves and awkward feelings about others. The Tetris pieces of pain and sorrow just keep stacking up. Now, some might think, just give it time. Time is what heals all wounds. And of course, time is an essential part of healing, but time itself doesn't actually bring healing. We need more. And God has given us something more, and it's lament. So I want to be clear about when we talk about lament. Lament is not just simply complaining to God. Lament is actually a form of worship. It's also, I want us to understand that it's not a denial of faith, it's actually an expression of faith. It's what happens when people who believe in God turn to Him with their pain, not to hide it, and not even to fix it quickly, but to bring it honestly before Him. And in a world that often rushes past grief or avoids it altogether, biblical lament invites us to slow down and speak truth, and be held by a God who listens. It's a God-given way to bring the depths of our hearts before the Lord. So you say, okay, I understand what that is, but how do we do that? And that's what I hope for us to try to do together today. This is going to be a different kind of sermon than we ordinarily do. I'm going to try to lead us in a guided practice of lament through these different steps that you can draw from Scripture. And that means that after I speak about each step and try to explain it and introduce us to it, then I'm going to give some time for quiet reflection for you to actually start doing that or trying or practice it a little bit. Just start, that's it. And I hope this will equip us to be a people who have this tool of God from His Word to engage and to respond and lean towards Him in these times of deep sorrow. So step one, orient yourself toward God. Orient yourself toward God. This first step of biblical lament is orienting ourselves to God. You may be like, well, duh, Sean, that seems really obvious. I mean, if we're talking to God, we have to orient ourselves towards God. But this isn't easy. And sometimes we really don't orient ourselves towards God. Sometimes we just, you know, think of God as like, you know, just another, like a religious version of Santa Claus. But what we're talking about here is when we have this ocean of pain in us, we can sometimes wonder if God likes us. Sometimes we might doubt, is God for us? We can feel confused sometimes about God's love. Or we read Psalms that talk about how He is our refuge and strength, how He is reigning as King, and yet we might be wondering, but God, have You forgotten about this area of Your kingdom? One of the most compelling illustrations of orienting yourself toward God, at least in my opinion, is in the season of anguish of the Old Testament character Job. Job lost it all. He didn't just lose material possessions. He lost his children, his family, in a tragic, horrific accident. He faced these enormous hardships, and yet all through that book, there's this dialogue and debate in there, this anguish of his soul, but it's all God-facing. He kept talking to God. He kept crying out for an audience with God. He wanted his day in court with God. Now, Job wasn't perfect in all of his responses, but he was right that he remained God-facing through all of that. So the first step of biblical lament is simply orient yourself toward God, your heart toward Him, your mind toward Him, your emotions toward Him. And I want to show you some biblical examples of what this looks like or what it sounds like. Here's some of the language that God has given us of other people who have walked this path. Psalm chapter 80. Give ear, O shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock, you who are enthroned upon the cherubim, shine forth. That orientation of give ear, leaning into relationship with God. Or Psalm 77, the psalmist says, I cry aloud to God, He will hear me. In the day of my trouble I seek the Lord, in the night my hand is stretched out with wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. Do you hear that anguish? But yet, what is the psalmist doing? Orienting himself to God. I cry aloud to God. Now, I want us to see that as the psalmist laments here, he begins reminding himself that he isn't just talking to the wind. He's not just speaking into the void, complaining to a friend even. He's crying out in prayer to the God of the universe. Think about that. There is no better person to process your pain than the God of the universe. God knows your pain and He cares. And this is why Jesus was able to encourage His disciples when He says, don't be anxious, trust me. Don't be fearful, trust me, Jesus said. And then he proved it to them in this kind of, this almost humorous, illustrative way. He says in Luke 12, even the hairs of your head are all numbered. And this is where we all kind of look around and we laugh at each other because some of us have more and less hairs. But we can't, don't miss the depth of what Jesus is saying with the humor that we often attach to it. I don't think of all the information you have about yourself that you have ever stopped and said, you know, I ought to count the hairs on my head just so that I know that about me. So when somebody asks me, I can tell them. It's absurd. It's one of those things that I mean, even your doctor isn't saying when you sit down and say, okay, give me a head count and give me a hair count. They're not doing that. And I wonder if Jesus is picking something like that to show, to blast through our skepticism perhaps on God's care by Jesus saying, listen, God knows something about you that you don't even think is important for yourself. He knows those details. Psalm 34, verse 17, he says, the righteous cry out and the Lord hears and rescues them from all their troubles. The Lord is near the brokenhearted and saves those crushed in spirit. So, you know, as religious people, sometimes we might start to, we innately have to fight against this notion that we have an audience with God because of how we perform or how we behave or how we have earned through a track record of kind of good works. Works righteousness is death to the gospel. It is death to our souls. You can come to God in brokenness and in a crushed spirit, and he will not turn away. So I want us to each take a moment now to set your mind on God, to orient yourself toward God. I'm going to give us 30 seconds. I don't know if that's too long or too short. I don't know. It'll just be what it is, okay? I'm going to have a timer up here, so if you start freaking out because it feels like you're going to fall into the void of silence, you can know that it's going to end. I don't know. I've not done this before. Can we just try this? Can you just bow your head and have a moment of silence and remember God's power, his goodness, his sovereignty? Remember he does hear you. Orient your heart toward God this morning. All right. Was that too long or too short? Just right? All right. Step two. Bring God your honest complaints. Bring your complaints before God. Here are some examples of what this sounds like in the scriptures of biblical lament. Psalm 64. Hear my voice, O God, in my complaint. I love the realism there. He doesn't try to make it bureaucratic and flowery. Just, I have a complaint. Psalm chapter 5. Listen to my words, Lord. Consider my sighing. Another translation had the word groanings in there. Or Psalm 28. Lord, I call to you, my rock. Do not be deaf to me. If you remain silent to me, I will be like those going down to the pit. Listen to the sound of my pleading when I cry to you for help. But I think one of the best examples of bringing God your honest complaint is found in Psalm 22. Please hear this. Please hear this. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I find no rest. Now this psalm is famous because these words, though they were written by King David, these are the words that were cried out by our suffering Savior on the cross. And I hope that knowing that Jesus lamented, he lamented in the garden, he lamented on the cross, I hope that knowing that even Jesus lamented, it gives you permission to also orient yourself toward God and bring your complaints to him. But I also want us to understand this, and this is where the gospel is at. And if you're a guest here, the gospel, the story of Jesus, his life, death, and resurrection is a little unfamiliar to you. This is why we gather. This is what gives us hope as Christians. Jesus gave the greatest of all laments. Right here, so that you would never have to give this lament yourself. That's the gospel. Because Jesus cried out forsaken, that means if you are united to him in faith, you will never have to cry that kind of lament yourself. Jesus lamented this for you. He took your forsakenness. That's the good news of the gospel. Now, one challenge with this step of bringing your complaints to God is sometimes we don't know what we're feeling. Now, there's all sorts of different kinds of people here together today. When I mean by kinds, I mean by the way you're wired, the way you process the world, the way you see the world and yourself. Some of you are word people. I'm a word person. I verbally process. Some of you are not. You're an internal processor. You have to have people kind of help you draw words out of you or understand what's going on in your heart with emotions. Sometimes emotions and pain just kind of swirl around in us and get all mixed together, and we might not know how to talk to God because we might not even have the words to put to what we feel. Now, some of you feel like, I got this, man. God's got a lot of my words, and they're just coming. Great, okay? Just hang in here with us, because not all of us are like that. And if you're more the person that just feels kind of at a loss, like there's just all these Tetris pieces of scary emotional shapes in you, and you just don't know even how to describe them or how to bring that complaint to God, this is going to be really practical. I'm going to list several dark emotions, hard emotions, and try to define them. And this is content that I found in other study and reading. It's not exhaustive, but I hope it's at least representative of some of what we have been feeling over this past few days, today and continuing on. I hope it's helpful, because if it can put some definition and shape to what you have, then you at least have a way to talk to God about it. Does that make sense? So that's what this is aimed for. Disappointment. Disappointment is unmet expectations. The more significant the expectations, the more significant the disappointment. Anguish. This is almost an unbearable and traumatic swirl of shock, incredulity, grief, and powerlessness. The element of powerlessness is what makes anguish traumatic. We're unable to change or reverse or negotiate what's happened. And even in those situations where we might temporarily try to reroute anguish with to-do lists and tasks and busyness, anguish always seems to find its way back to us. Grief. This is often thought of as a process, kind of a linear process. You're like, you work yourself through these stages of grief. But recent research seems to refute that idea. I mean, I think there's a notion of truth there, but it's not nearly as linear and static as or progressive as we think. Grief has three foundational elements: loss, longing, and feeling lost. And an important part of grieving is the attempt to reconstruct a world of meaning that has been challenged by loss. And I think we are feeling that there has been this shaking of what has been said or what has been taught and a life lived, and we're trying to understand, okay, does that mean that this loss has attacked that sense of meaning? Betrayal. Betrayal is so painful because at its core, it's a violation of trust. And it happens in relationships in which trust is expected and assumed. So when it's violated, we're often shocked and we can struggle to believe what's happening. It can feel as if the ground beneath us has given way. Disillusionment. This is a feeling of disappointment. It results from the discovery that something is not as good as one believed it to be. Heartbreak. This is what happens when love is lost, or there is the perceived loss of love. But here's the catch. To love with any level of intensity and honesty is to become vulnerable, which means that heartbreak, at least in some measure in this sin-cursed world, it means heartbreak is unavoidable unless we choose not to love at all. But we know that's not actually living. That's actually not life. God is love, and He is life, and we've been made to love. So we've been made to have that vulnerability with one another. But it also then opens us up to that risk of heartbreak. Now again, those were just efforts to try to give some shape to maybe some of the things that you might have been feeling. I'm not trying to put emotions into you, just helping you to see if that is, there's something in there that, yes, that's that description. It at least gives you words then that you can then give your complaint to God. So in step two, you bring your honest complaint to God. We're going to practice this silently in just a minute. But let me prepare us. What are you feeling? What are you thinking? What words are in you that you can give to God? Can you describe your struggle? Can you talk to God about your fears? Can you try to explain to Him your grief or betrayal? And as you do this, please do it in the most honest terms possible. He can handle it. God can handle it all. So whatever questions or complaints you have for God, pray them like the psalmist. Here's how the psalmist does it in lament when they bring their complaints to God. They come humbly, but not demanding. Bring your pain, but not your pride. Let the frustrations that are expressed in lament push you toward God, not push you away from Him. And if you don't know what to say, use Psalm 22. If it was good enough for Jesus, it can be good enough for you, because it can remind you that Jesus said these words in your place. So I'll give us another 30 seconds. Quietly, bring your complaint to God this morning. Okay. Step three. Turn toward trust. Every biblical lament has a turning point. There's a hinge. It's often marked by the words yet, or but, or then. There's a movement from a complaint into a posture of trust. And so here's some examples of that in the Psalms. In Psalm 3, The complaint has been given, and then there's this hinge, this pivot. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the lifter of my head. Or in Psalm 23, yet you are holy, enthroned on the praises of Israel. There's that pivot, that turn toward trust. Or Psalm 77, then I said, right, here's that pivot towards trust, I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. Do you hear how there's this turn toward trust in those in that language? Can you hear that? You can't hear that? You can't hear that? Okay. This step is an inflection point. It's an intentional shift in focus from the cause of your lament to trusting in a God who has done and will do all He has promised. And this is an essential step of lament. In fact, if you don't have this step in lament, you really don't have biblical lament then. Lament isn't simply a confession or a complaint to God. Biblical lament turns intangible trust toward God despite the circumstances and pain. So I'm going to give us a moment for you to turn from the cause of your lament toward trust in God. Bring to mind who God is. And if you're thinking, Sean, I feel like I kind of have done that in one of those steps, they're kind of bleeding in together, that's okay. That's okay, right? I'm being very deliberate in working through this, okay? But in this step, we'll just give 30 more seconds. Bring to mind who God is. What is it? Who is God? And why is he trustworthy? In what he has done or who he is, how does that strengthen or invite you to trust him in this circumstance? Think about his character, his nature. Think about what he has promised you in his word. Here's some suggestions, okay? Psalm 30, verse 5, weeping may tarry for the night, but joy comes with the morning. So maybe your trust to God is, God, I trust that even though I weep in this night, that you will bring joy in the morning. Or maybe Romans 5:20. You would say, God, I want to trust you this. You said where sin increased, grace abounds all the more. Of course, there could be other passages that come to mind. Those are two suggestions for you this morning. Let's take some time and turn toward trust. All right, step 4. Ask boldly for relief. Isn't God amazing that you can complain to him and trust him and ask him? Ask boldly for relief. Here's an example, Psalm 10. Arise, O Lord. O God, lift up your hand. Forget not the afflicted. When you're confident in God and when you've experienced his faithfulness in the past in your life, you can make bold requests for the present. Some of you have relationships like that in your life that you can kind of be shameless in your asks of them because over time they have proven themselves. God is the one ultimately who you can always boldly ask. Just like the writers of biblical lament, we can appeal to God based on his character and his promises. And you've set yourself up for this because you've turned toward trust, right, in this last step. You're thinking, okay, he is trustworthy. I've reminded myself why he is trustworthy, why I can trust him. Now, based upon that relationship of trust with God, what can you ask him for? Biblical lament, here's what's interesting, how biblical lament functions. And when I say this, let me say it and then I'll qualify it, okay? This means that biblical lament allows the trials and sorrows of life to become an occasion to deepen our dependence on God. I'll say that again. Biblical lament, then, allows the trials and sorrows of life to become an occasion to deepen our dependence on God. Now, I am not finding a silver lining in our pain. I am simply stating a biblical fact. There is something in lament as you go through it. That what it does, it allows us to deepen our dependence on God. To help you ask boldly, okay? How can you ask boldly? I want to strengthen your shamelessness with God today, okay? And many of you know this passage, but in Hebrews chapter 4. And I got to keep going, but Hebrews is a great book because it's written to Christians who are ready to give up. It was written to Christians who had suffered so much, they were thinking, I'm not sure I'm going to continue following Jesus and worshiping him. The cost was so great. There is a verse in Hebrews where the writer actually says, don't cast away your faith. He actually has to tell them that. So in an effort to encourage them to remain steadfast in their faith, he writes this, "Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession." Keep believing what they're saying. Why? We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. So what's the result of that for us? What does that mean? Give me some practical, so what? Here it is. Let us then with confidence, another word would be boldness. Let us then with boldness draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. And I think the illustration is this. Only the child of the king can walk into the throne room and ask daddy for a glass of water. Any time of the day. So friends, you have been given that access through Christ. That's the gospel. So I'm going to give us another time of quiet reflection where you can boldly ask God for relief. And that's going to be unique to each one of us. There might be similarities. I don't know. You each are impacted by this in different ways, feeling different things in different places, and you're processing through all of this. Ask God boldly for relief. Here are some ideas of what that looks like in the Psalms from the Scriptures. These are drawn right from the scriptural text of other people who have lamented and have asked God boldly for relief as they have pivoted and turned toward trust. Arise, O Lord. Grant us help. Have mercy. Remember your covenant. Let justice be done. Restore us. Don't be silent. Listen. Teach me. Vindicate me. And of course, that list could go on and on. But I'm going to give us some time right now for you to boldly ask God for relief. And if you need to use these words as your words, you're welcome to, because they are God's words. All right, step five, this is the last. Choose to praise. Do you remember where we started? Orient towards God, your complaint. Aren't you glad that God has given us something so wonderful as lament? That leads us through the valley of the shadow of death, yet he is with us. Step five, choose to praise. Now, this might surprise you. But it's an important step to lament do its full and intended work in our life. In other words, lament hasn't had its full effect if it stops short of choosing to praise. And I want you to notice the word choose. Choose to praise. Remember, lament is a form of worship. And I want you to listen to how David turns to praise after his lament in Psalm 13. And for sake of time, and I'm not going to read the first part of Psalm 13, but it's a psalm of lament. You can go back and find it. And there's words of lament, emotions of lament. But then in verse 5, he says this. He pours out his questions, his sorrows before the Lord, and then he says this. But I have trusted in your faithful love, right? Turning towards trust. My heart will rejoice in your deliverance. Ask boldly for relief. Then what does he do? I will sing to the Lord because he has treated me generously. There's this response of faith, this choice to praise and lament. And in this step of lament, we depend on and invite the Holy Spirit to lead us into faith-filled worship, even if our song is still mingled with tears. And so I'm not suggesting this morning just kind of suck it up, buttercup, and muscle through this. No, you don't have to. You can weep through your praise. You will need God's Spirit to strengthen you and give you a heart to move toward that destination of praise. But I hope that in progressing through this biblical lament, even this morning, and I know it's been kind of procedural, I'm sorry. It's just how we have to do it in a time like this, in 30 seconds, you know. Who wants to pray with a 30-second timer? But hopefully this will kind of orient you towards this process. And I'm praying that you can move from complaint and turn toward trust. and make your bold requests. And that hopefully in your heart you have some form of praise in you, some spark of praise that you could have as response to God. That is biblical lament. It's informed and shaped by the Psalms, by prophetic writings, by lamentations. But I want to say this, there's no quick solution to pain and grief. And I'm not suggesting that going through a process like this, now you're all okay. Lament will not magically make everything better. The weight and sorrow and the sting of betrayal often remain longer than we expect and certainly longer than we desire. So what do? We return to lament. Trust isn't simply a one-time decision. Trust is a continuous journey with God. So return to lament. We must practice lament over and over so it can keep leading us to trust in God. And like the psalmist from ages past, we're going to end our practice of lament this morning with a song. And Kirsten's going to come to the piano. And she is going to lead us in a song of lament. But I want you to just know that at the end of this song, it turns to praise. So we're going to invite you to remain seated. And you are welcome and encouraged to sing, respond, and choose to praise God through this song if you can, if you choose to. Kirsten is going to lead us on piano and with vocals. And this is how we will practice this last step of choosing to praise, by helping each other do that this morning.